When I rang my dad, my slaughterman father, about who lives in Queensland and doesn't like Muslims, and laid it out to him that I knew he was in on this plot to turn my ex-boyfriend into a woman.
Wow, what did he have to say? Oh my god!
Oh, I'll put you onto your mum.
Oh so, no! Oh god!
For a while though, I also thought everybody was poisoning me, because one day after I'd sort of played this little game of sexual cat and mouse with Smithy, where I tried to get as much drugs out of him as possible without having to touch him. Mm-hmm. He'd sort of gone, yeah, well, I don't find you very attractive either. Go and have a look in the mirror. Look at yourself. And I'm like, no, that's not how to insult me. You should know that. But he went on about it for about 2 hours. And then when I finally looked in the mirror, I was like, oh, gee. And I had all scabs and lumps and blackened teeth and all that. And I thought someone's poisoning me.
That's the voice of Luke Williams, intriguing Australian writer, author of Ice Age, which is a book about his descent into meth addiction. We chatted a lot about that book in the last podcast 2 weeks ago. That was Luke Williams part one, but because we had such a long, interesting chat, I thought, you know what, I'm going to make this 2 podcasts about Luke. And I'm so happy to say we had really great feedback about part one, so I'm hoping you're all back to hear part two. This is wide-ranging. We swap roles sometimes. Luke interviews me about stuff. We talk about everything from relationships to Buddhism to Indian holy men who eat things and do things that you wouldn't believe. Before we go any further, though, I do just have to explain one thing to you that will make sense, okay? This is a Buddhist concept, hungry ghosts, which both Luke and I suspect we might be. Hungry ghosts are found within various Buddhist teachings, representing a condition or realm that people might find themselves in after they die. Also known as preta in Sanskrit, a hungry ghost is often depicted in Tibetan Buddhism as having a large, empty belly and a thin neck and a small mouth. Okay, so visualize that and imagine trying to fill that big, hungry, grumbly belly when you've got a tiny neck and a tiny mouth, and you'll get through this conversation more easily. I know that's a weird way to start, but you'll thank me for it in about 15 minutes. Okay, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Michelle Laurie, and this is the Nitty Gritty Committee, stories about the guts and the glory of life, and I'm very pleased to present to you part two of my chat with Luke Williams. I read just most recently your article on Pattaya. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Pattaya.
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 I didn't know anything about that city, but it's like the sexual tourism capital of Thailand, right?
Yeah, I didn't know that either when I first went there, but I quickly realised 27,000 sex workers, wall-to-wall brothels, go-go bars, mash-ups, yes, parlours, everywhere.
Yeah, you wrote another
thank you.
Brilliant article of immersion, and I went there, I was part of it. You had sex with what are the boys called?
Money boys.
Money
boys. Me, money boy. Oh, that's I'm making that peek out. So I've got this. I brought along something, which is me nearly became a money boy. I was so excited. I couldn't believe it at age 36.
Yep.
This is a singlet I got offered to work as a money boy
in Boys Town.
I know. It wouldn't quite work on me. I know. How slutty is it? How slutty is it? And it would bring out the red in my hair and the red in my eyes and my pimples and all the rest of it. So I thought, no.
And what do we wear on the bottom with that?
Nothing. Just nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Really?
No. You just wear jeans or whatever else like that, because they want you to pretend that. In my experience, when men want you in a sexual way, mm-hmm, for money, they want you to pretend you're bisexual and you're just doing this for a bit of experimentation, you know, and you really like having sex with virgin girls. That's the kind of stuff they want you to say.
Okay.
You have to kind of man it up. Although you do, yeah, by and large.
Even as a money boy, you're expected to go, oh, I don't know what I'm doing here holding your penis. I'm just playing it by ear.
You like that, mate?
So, yeah, right.
Well, no, of course I wouldn't talk like that. But
yeah,
no, there's a lot of guys who go there who are actually heterosexual.
Yes.
Who have children.
Mm-hmm.
These are the Thai guys, I mean, the money boys.
Okay.
And they just give hand jobs, and that's just what they do for money.
Wow.
And then you have sex shows where they all come out with numbers on them. And they're big, beefy guys, and they are basically heterosexual. That they do it, but they they penetrate older straight men. How they do it when they're clearly, you can tell they're heterosexual. Yeah. There's something about them. But they all come out, and there's one place called Boys, 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 which is basically just a brothel. But they come out on stage, and about 10% of women, of the people who go there, are women, and they come out every night at about 9 o'clock at night. And you know that Boys, Boys, Boys by Celeste?
Yes, I do. Boys, Boys, Boys.
They play that Oi Down the Street.
Okay.
And they march down the street and strut their stuff and sing along. And and that's it. The shift has started, and you can pick which one that you want. But I got offered at this one bar. There was a German guy there, and this old Queensland guy who ran this bar said, "I'm the madam around here. I run this place. This guy will pay for your pay. You can pay for a week here, sort of thing. This will pay week's rent here." And he was he wasn't bad. Like, he was a bit creepy, which you can use that in your favour if you're having money for sex. Because you kind of go, "Oh, this is so wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to be aroused by this, so I am."
Okay.
And I thought, oh, gee, I'm so excited at age 36, you know, that somebody that I'm getting asked paid for in this sex work capital. And I thought, but there's like 500 prostitutes here, right, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Yeah, but you're the only white one. Think about this."
Yeah,
you
right.
would have a clear advantage here.
Wow.
Because you'd be the only, you know, Anglo one here.
Yes.
And I thought about it. I just thought, no, I just can't get a stiffy like that anymore, though. Like, I just wouldn't be able to do it.
Have you ever had sex for money?
Yeah, I have done. Okay. Yeah, all sex is for money. Well, no, that's probably not technically right, but all gay guys do it. All gay guys do it.
Do they?
Yeah, as far as I know.
You've been a money boy?
Money boy.
Well, as in, like, yeah, not necessarily. Well,
when I was, I worked in a brothel. Remember me from that brothel that you're in?
Which one?
In? I worked in a brothel called, I haven't told anybody. Hi, Nana, by the way, if you're listening. She's been dead for 5 years.
Good.
If she's listening, I'd be very worried.
Okay.
But I worked in a place called The Stable in 2001, which is in Port Melbourne.
Yes.
And I found it very difficult because it was very competitive, and everybody goes out and because it's a small community, often people come in, you'd know. And that I found difficult getting customers. So I just thought, well, I'll just go and work on the street then if you're going to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that because I kind of felt like it was my rite of passage. I didn't really need the money. I had a boyfriend at the time.
Okay.
And I just wanted the adventure.
Of street prostitution.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I went and did that for a couple of weeks. And then years later, post ABC work, when I was doing my law degree, and I was a bit short on cash and was having trouble getting another job, I just started advertising. Well, I had all these like creepy old guys contact me online all the time, and I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to start asking them for money. And so I did.
Mm.
And so then I started that again, and then I worked out a way that I'd find the least attractive people I could find on there and then talk them up. Like, chat them up for about 20 minutes. And then I'd go, "Oh, did I mention that I really need, and I was a cheap whore, $100?
Oh, right.
Come on over."
Uh-huh.
And I did that for a period of time.
Yeah.
And the sex was fine because, you know, gay guys will ruin anything anyway. So what's the difference? Which is why it's the money is so low.
Yeah.
You know. But the conversations, I just couldn't. It's like me, you know how I'm just constantly talking about myself during this whole interview.
Yes.
Well, can you imagine me trying to put up that with someone else?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
They
wanted to talk.
Oh.
And so there would be like an hour or so before or afterwards, and then I'd sort of say at the end, plus, you know, $150 or whatever for that hour beforehand, which was by far the worst, other than having
work.
You bend over in front of me like that, you know, wanting me to say that, you know, what I do to virgin girls and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Me wishing your asshole was a restart button for the rest of my life. It's the only time that could possibly be good. But no, it wasn't traumatic. It was icky at times. But when I did it, I just used to think, well, what do they do in nursing homes at times? You know, I mean, it could be, it's just, and this pays better. And also, just do it. Like, just, this is just work. Just do it. But I was also using steroids at the time, so I could get stiffies easier. I know, I'm not, hi, Nana. Thanks for loosening. But now I just thought, I love the fact that you've asked me. So I just flirted with old men all night at this bar, so they'd buy me drinks. And then I got drunk. And one of the other money boys got jealous and punched me twice in the head. Right. And so then I went to the bar next door. And the guys I was talking to, these guys from South Africa and whatever, I said, "Right, I said, come over to this bar now. okay, and come and sit here. And so then they sat there all night and had drinks.
Guarded you.
And then someone from that bar said, why don't you come and work here then? And gave me this singlet.
Okay.
Which I haven't put in the story, but will be in my book.
Good. Thank God. So you're writing a book about Pattaya?
I'm writing a book about Asia and about the extreme experiences that Westerners have when they go to Asia.
Well, I don't know, all of us have them, mate. I think you have a lot more extreme experiences than most of us. You're amazing. Okay, so what next? So what haven't you done? So homelessness now.
Mm.
Then what? What do you think?
Well, at the end of the year, I'm going to start doing some... I just think adventures don't have to be so dark and serious
either. I'm glad you think that, yes.
So, and I'm heading into that age where it's not going to be cute anymore soon. Okay. People get bored with it. So I'm going to go with I met a guy last year when I was in Rishikesh, India, and he's in his 70s. He's a former military survivalist. And for the last 50 years, he has been trekking through the Himalayas. He speaks over a dozen tribal dialects, and he's got a shaman girlfriend who he goes and sees every year in Western Nepal.
Uh-huh.
He's been attacked by bears. He's got scars up his arm.
Wow.
And he's a lovely guy. Impossible to box him in as a certain sort of person.
Yes.
And I'm going to be going with him at the end of November and some guys from Ireland on a 2-month trek through the Himalayas for a story. I wouldn't do it otherwise. I couldn't be bothered otherwise.
Okay, and just for the story. It's just for the story.
It is just, but it'll be a great experience to have.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so that will hopefully be the end of my dark and dirty adventures, and I'll be doing all these nice sort of stuff that more middle-aged sort of middle-aged adventurers do, you know?
Well, I think you certainly deserve to be happy and safe. Are you happy?
Yeah, I'm very happy. I'm very happy. Yeah, but great. I feel happy in your presence.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I feel really good talking to you.
Yeah, I feel happy in your presence as well.
Good.
You're only about 5 years younger than me, but
I'm 36.
Yeah, right? Yep. But there's something incredibly...
childish and immature about me.
I was going to say youthful
and
adventurous. Oh. I don't think we equate adventure with middle-aged people.
Oh, you know what I mean, though. Yeah. You start to do all those outdoor-y sort of stuff when you get older, you know what I mean? So lovely talking to you, and I can't believe I told you all that stuff about... I definitely won't be putting this one up on my Facebook about all that stuff, about all the... It was just something about you. What is it? Because you told me you worked in a brothel or something.
Maybe,
I just couldn't...
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what it is, but I try to let you know. I'm not certainly not Lily White or, you know, I've made mistakes. I've done things. I've got a drug pass. That wasn't necessarily a mistake, but like...
But you weren't addicted to drugs. You just used
it. I was addicted to drugs for a little while, to speed. Certainly at uni, and then I used again in the brothels because I was just so desperate to get through every day, you know.
And how did you get through that?
I met a guy and it worked out well for me. He wasn't into it and I was really into him. So, and I ended up marrying him and we just divorced, but it's been 19 years we were together. So, yeah, I got lucky. You know, oftentimes in that situation, the person who's not using uses and suddenly you're in this awful wormhole for the next 30 years of your life where you're both using.
Yeah.
But we went the other way. He was like, nah, I'm not into it. And I thought, okay, I'll just stop and be with you.
Really? As simple as that?
I think I transferred the addiction. Had the transference.
So does that mean that, and I'm not trying to be Dr. Phil here, was there certain insecurities that led to your drug use that was sort of filled because then you had a male partner and then you felt loved or something?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely, yeah. I was young. I was 23. I wasn't that young. But, yeah, I had a friend at the time who said, nah, you're just marrying this guy because he's the first person who said he loved you. And I was like, fuck off. But I think she's right. Even though he's a great person and we have kids together and all of that, but I think looking back... I was in a big hurry to get married and really pin him down. So I think you're right, yeah. You filled the same gaps. Yeah. So there you go. You're good to talk to.
And you're not feeling like you've... I mean, how are you now?
Well, I'm just newly separated still, really. I mean, it happened like last December we kind of moved. So I'm just still working through it. I feel like I'm just realising now how... big a deal it is, how it's kind of affected me. It's a big deal. It's taken me a long time to pull myself back together, you know? So I think I'm fine, but I don't know, it is taking me a while to pull myself together.
Yeah, it's hard to when you separate and you have that, this person was holding me back and now I can do all these things. Sometimes you don't realize, even in a very bad relationship, how much that you're actually getting out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I still think he was holding me together, really, more than holding me back. But he got sick of holding me together, I think. You know, like...
Really?
Yeah, because I was just like... I'm always outward. I'm very outward. And like I needed him at home, keeping the house together. And I'd bring pets and then I had twins. We had twins. But you know what I mean? Like I was just always more. But you have to deal with it all because I'm out there. And he just got sick of that. He just got sick of me just assuming that he would deal with every bit of shit I brought home or added while I was out in the world. You just got sick of being that guy behind me.
You've got a lot of empathy. You see, just isn't that amazing? You've broken up with someone and you're just seeing it from his
point of view. You know, I've written a book about it, about Buddhism for breakups. I think that's helped me a lot. Yeah, yeah.
Have you really?
Yeah, it's out in February.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so this it's helped you too?
Definitely. It's like I've studied Buddhism since 2006, but
oh, right.
The writing daily has helped me, yes, stay in the process. And
do you call yourself a Buddhist?
Yes.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do practice Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
It's how funny, how weird. I'm concerned about I still want to be an asshole, you know?
Yes, okay.
But I can see that in the way that you've just described the breakup and you've talked about it purely from his point of view.
Yeah, right.
How much empathy and how much compassion you have. I think that's just amazing. And I hope to get to that point one day when bad things happen to me and I'm just focused on what it's like from the other person's point of view. I think that's amazing. Really, I do.
Hi, Monique Bowley here. I host a show called Mamma Mia Out Loud. It's a weekly podcast with what women are talking about. You should come listen. But don't take my word for it. Here's just some of the reviews we've had from happy listeners.
Why do you have to be so feminist all the time? Shut up.
Mamma Mia, isn't that just hating on men?
Oh, that's just stupid girl shit.
Yes, stupid girl shit. Like politics.
I feel frustrated that there's no vote. I would love the parliament to vote on it.
And smart pop culture. Kim Kardashian said this week that she's not a feminist.
Which part about feminism are you not down with? Is it the having control of your body and your life? Is it about having the vote?
The show drops every Wednesday. Subscribe in iTunes or your favourite podcast app.
Are you going to move back to Melbourne, do you think?
No way, no.
No, we have to.
No. Well, I've got the next period in India. I'm going to go to Manila, where I'm doing something on ladyboys and men who like ladyboys.
Great.
And then next year I've got the London version of the UK version of the book, so I'm going to do some reporting for that.
Great.
But, you know, I've never been to London.
Right, okay. I've only ever been there a few days.
And I've never been to America, so I haven't travelled much because I've spent a lot of money on studying drugs.
So,
I've got a lot of that. A lot of that ahead of me. But the reason that I love Thailand so much is because I can practice my Buddhism.
Yeah, you're immersed.
And nobody looks at me funny when I go and go and do my bow to the Buddha.
You and your monks. I thought, oh, that sounds great. I'm going to India for 2 weeks in January to see His Holiness and do this big Buddhist thing there.
Up in Dharamsala?
No, he's going to be down in Bodh Gaya. So I've never been to India before. Bodh Gaya is it's not near anything, sort of in the middle.
Okay.
And it's where the Bodhi tree is that Buddha, you know, attained enlightenment under.
Yeah, that's near Varanasi. I know where that is. Yeah. I was there last year.
Okay.
So cool. I spent a lot of time in Varanasi, but I didn't get that far because I'm such a bad
Buddhist. No, you're not Varanasi. Buddhist. Did you see them burning bodies?
I did. It's not shocking. It's shocking at first, but it's not after a while because most of them are old and decrepit. And I hadn't quite taken on Buddhism then because I went to India thinking there might be something else there.
Yes.
But I found it all a bit trippy, hippie, sort of transcendental.
Yes.
Or not, you know what I mean.
Yes.
It was all about God and about reincarnation and Buddhism seemed to me to be just a basic description of how life is and how things work.
Yeah.
So I was open-minded and I left a bit cynical about a lot of the things in Hinduism, a lot of the Westerners who go there and basically start cults.
And the aesthetes who, you know, naked and paint their bodies white. See those cats?
I did. I wrote a story about
that. I bet you did.
I did. They're cannibals.
Yeah, right. They pull out the corpses.
It sounds a little bit sensationalist to say that, but they do. They drag the dead bodies out of the river.
Yeah.
They take little bits of their skin and they eat them in a ritualized way.
Oh,
they whatever's taboo.
Oh,
so
I
they're
see.
Always stoned. They're always smoking opium.
Yeah.
They make mixtures with snake venom and opium and bits of human ash, and I've heard, I didn't see it, but they have sex with dead dogs as well. And so anything that's frowned upon by Hindu society, they're saying, well, it's taboo, it's bringing us
closer to gods.
Yeah, God. closer to whatever they see as being the thing out there. Do you believe in that? Do you believe that there's a thing out there, or is it very kind of a material Buddhism that you've sort of got?
No, I believe in the Buddhist concept that there are realms, there are many realms, and we just kind of slide in and out of them. And
what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, the Buddhist, the cycle of existence, the six realms of existence, you know, three upper, three lower, and that there is a heaven and a hell, but we never stay anywhere permanently because we're just working out karma, you know, and the animal realm is a lower realm only because they're so vulnerable to us, you know. And so, yes, I believe that. I believe I'm in this cycle of samsara, of existence, and one day hopefully I'll be enlightened and not have to go through this cycle anymore. So it's an inherently kind of get me out of here kind of belief, really. It is life is suffering.
Yes, and desires suffering, and that's helped me.
Yeah.
So in the, and you're talking about those realms, and sometimes we spend different times in those, in a particular realm. It can kind of be our problem realm in a way.
Yep.
Do you see a realm amongst that? For me, there's a hungry ghost.
I know.
Ghost realm where you're kind of wanting things that...
Where you've got a tiny mouth and throat and a huge belly so you can never fill it up. You're just always hungry. I think about the hungry ghost realm all the time. Am I in it? That's what I wonder all the time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I fight against that. I work on that because I am very much a person who struggles to feel satisfied. Every time I achieve a goal, I'm always thinking three goals ahead by then. I'm not really, don't take the moment to be in that achievement. I think maybe I am a hungry ghost actually in this lifetime.
Yeah, I have problems with that too, but I'm worried that going the other way will mean I don't do anything as well. So it's a hard balance, isn't it, between...
Yeah.
I mean, they call it the middle way, don't they, which is kind of between having, a massive ego and then being as Buddha was for a period in his life where he was starving himself and he was hurting himself.
Yeah.
But finding that middle way... there's no specific guide on that necessarily, is there? It's something you kind of have to work out yourself with.
There's the Eightfold Path.
Yeah.
It's eight pointers, you know, to helping you stay in the middle. But again, the thing I love about Buddhism is it's so much about you not deciding for yourself, but you being real with yourself, you know. I know when I'm not in the middle and I know when I am in the middle. And it's about just being hard on myself, critiquing myself, not asking anybody else, am I in the middle? It's only I'm the only person who can say. And I like that.
And one of the things that surprised me about Buddhism in general is that they don't say completely kill your ego.
No.
And that's to do with the middle way as well. They say just kind of be aware of and temper it if you like.
Yeah.
Because kill your ego and you're basically dead.
Absolutely. A lot of people think that Buddhism is this really soft victim kind of religion, you know, that we're all about submission. But, I mean, look at the Dalai Lama. China's been trying to kill him for 60 years. He's a tough dude.
It does come across passive at times, and I think that's to do with the types of people who often teach it here, that they're just saying, oh, just everything's fine. Don't sort of take any action at all.
Yeah, but Tibetans are tough people.
Yeah.
Chinese people are tough people. You know, the great Buddhist nations are tough and hardy people just to survive childbirth and survive life. They're not pushovers.
No, and in fact, in Myanmar at the moment, they're abusing their power
and
they're being awful to the Rohingya people there.
I know, they're killing Muslims though.
They are, and they're being, and monks get, because everybody in a lot of those countries, they have to be a monk for a period of time.
Yeah.
And so that means you have a wide range of people from a wide range of backgrounds becoming monks, and they get up to all sorts of mischief at time. Would you ever become a monk?
Sometimes I think I could become a nun. I've never said that out loud before, but I do think the older I get, the more I start to dream about having made enough money that I can give my house to my children when they're a bit older, and then I can go and live and sweep floors for a monk and cook for a monk and just kind of do that until I die in a monastery somewhere.
And you have more precepts to follow if you're a nun than if you're a monk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have
yeah.
more rules.
Yeah, definitely. But so what? I don't know if I could become a nun, but I certainly would love to...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
To live out my final years in that scenario. That's my
in that
dream.
Sort of environment.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess it would take a lot of discipline, wouldn't it, to be to say the least, to live that kind
me,
of lifestyle.
Because like I've spent my life trying to get things, to get stuff. Get money, get jobs, get famous, get...
Hungry ghost.
Hungry ghost, right? Yeah, absolutely. Get followers on Facebook, get... So
it's
yes,
never enough, never enough.
No, I love...
But it's still worthwhile at the same time.
It is, and I try to use it for positive things and try to use it for altruism and to help others, you know. That's the way I temper it. But I do think, oh, gee, it'd be nice to think I could evolve to a level personally where I could walk away from all of that and be happy and content with no one knowing who I am, with normal coloured hair.
That's a first priority, though.
Just a quiet, peaceful, normal person sweeping a floor. That's a dream that I could get to that level of evolution in this lifetime for me.
Yeah, I tend to think, you know, maybe I'm in the same boat as I need to be cut off from society altogether, no yeah. social media, no nothing, but I'd have to actually go and be a monk and yes. I'd have to follow all the rules and things would just change bit by bit over time. But there's still a lot I want to do in this world for you. It's obviously... You've got kiddies to raise.
Yeah, I do.
And that's hugely important.
Yeah.
For me, there's things, you know, that I want to do as well that I'd like to think are important before I give up on the world and
yeah.
and say, well, that's enough now. I can't yeah. fill it anymore. The bucket's already full.
Yeah. But you're also in that world of journalism where your work's really important to... Oh,
sometimes.
Well...
Is it? I don't know.
I think
does it help?
Yeah, I think it does. Like the work of yours that I'm familiar with is... very educational, very real, very much like you all want to talk about the meth epidemic. Well, this is it. Mm. You all want to talk about sex tourism. This is it. This is homelessness. This is, you know, all the things that you talk about. This is male prostitution. This is.
And it's hot. No. No, but there's also a huge element of ego in it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's. I could go and help society in any number of ways that doesn't involve me going, look, everyone, look what I've done. And here's a photo of me and my name next to it as well.
I know.
So there's a huge element of ego in that I can't deny.
Well, I'm right there with you, girl. I am right there beside you.
And I think that the times when I've managed to get that up, get past that, I think, oh, I do think that's where real fulfillment.
Yes.
Eventually,
yes.
When you completely let go of yourself.
Yes.
Not to the necessary extent of being a monk, but when you let your ego go and just get involved
totally.
In something else or someone else's story or
yeah.
or
I
something.
Mean, can you imagine just like knowing there's no big break coming for you, there's no big story, that's all behind you. No one's ever going to blow smoke up your ass again about your writing. It's all... Honestly, the rest of your life is going to be about sweeping that floor, cooking that rice, changing those sheets.
It sounds slightly like subservient woman, sort of traditional subservient woman
well, it
role
is,
that you're wanting to take.
Maybe it is. To me, I mean, I know a lot. I see a lot of men perform this role, so maybe that I don't.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Know.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah,
so,
yeah. Coming from a different angle on it.
Yeah. I see. You know, His Holiness's attendants, and I think, oh God, that'd be so cool. But they're monks. I wish I could be a monk. It's just one of the many, many circumstances in which I wish I was a man. Really.
But you can be a nun, right?
I can be. Yeah, but I don't know. There's something. I mean, I have spent a life wishing I was a man. To be honest, not to a gender dysphoria extent, but certainly. I don't know, just thinking being a guy would be really cool.
Because of privilege or?
Must be, I think. Even watching rugby league players run out on State of Origin, there was always a moment, there's a bit in my heart where I wanted to be Sam Thiday.
Really?
I wanted to be a man, yeah.
Because there's nothing like that for women, though.
No, there's not. And even, I guess this goes back to what you were saying before, even I know some great Buddhist nuns who are very well respected and all of that, but there's something about being a monk that just seems elevated to me. But I think that's my problem.
Well, you do the same thing, except women have more rules.
Yes.
The nuns follow more rules. Yeah. And in some countries, Thailand for a long time up until recently didn't recognise nuns.
Yeah.
They've got a very patriarchal version of
Buddhism. Yeah, right. Buddhism. Okay, right.
But I'm not I sound like I'm trying to talk you into it, don't I?
No, you're not at all. It's... I don't get to have conversations about Buddhism very often, so okay, I'm really good. Digging
I don't
it.
Either.
Yeah, I'm digging it. But I'm trying to have more conversations about it. I'm going to turn my website, which I'm working with professional web developers, I'm going to create an online Dharma centre, Buddhist centre. That's my dream.
And how's that
right
going to work?
Well, I think about all the things I love about a good Dharma centre. There's classes, you know, really targeted courses, that are really easily accessible in terms of like the first course I ever did was called just dealing with disturbing emotions. And I thought, that's me. Great. You know? And so it sounds down to earth and approachable, and you can get in there and you can get involved in Buddhism at that very approachable level. So I want to provide that.
And what was your difficult emotion, by the way, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I had lots of them. I was in Brisbane doing radio and hating it.
That explains it all.
It does a bit. If you're from Queensland, it does a bit, right?
I like Brisbane because I'm not from there, but I can understand.
That's it? Yeah. Yeah, but I was like from there, I'd come to Melbourne and made a life for myself and then went back there to work and I was like, oh, no. I didn't like the guys I was working with, but that wasn't their fault. It was I just had a bad attitude when I got there of, right, I want to get in here and get the fuck out back to Melbourne, you know? Mm-hmm. Didn't happen that quickly, so... I had depression, anxiety, career, really, motivated. And, so I saw this course and thought, that's me.
So, but depression, anxiety, but what sort of emotions did you learn was precipitating this angst or whatever?
Yeah, I was angry. I was angry and nasty and bitchy and aggressive and, you know, those. And so it was learning what was below all of those. What's below that? What's really happening? I'm fearful. I'm afraid of being forgotten in Melbourne. I'm afraid of I've worked really hard and it's going to go nowhere. I'm afraid, you know? It's like getting down to those actual things that you can, then you can deal with them. Then you can look at them and just change my life overnight.
Yeah, I can totally understand that.
Yeah, started getting along with the boys I worked with. It was great, you know? It's all good. Yeah, and here I am now, 10 years later.
I honestly am trying to get to this point.
I really love that.
So why not Catholicism still, apart from
I really like Jesus. You know, my son said to me recently, do you trust Jesus? And I was like, yeah, man, I trust Jesus. I find Jesus' teachings and Buddha's teachings almost interchangeable on a lot of issues. Very, very similar, but there's just something about Buddhism I find more grounded, more down to earth. Christianity... I'm not into that. The culture of Christianity I find really kind of corrupted, and you know, so often you think, how can you be calling yourself a Christian? I don't understand.
I wonder though if you didn't live in some of these Buddhist countries and you saw day to day some of the stuff.
If I lived in Burma, I'd be going, how can you call yourself Buddhist and be killing Muslims?
Or even absolutely. Thailand recently, where they've had all the tiger temples and all that, and you kind of it would spoil it, wouldn't you?
I was in Cambodia and I took food around to the monks. And they just looked at me like I had fallen off the turnip truck. They were just like, all right, oh, mate, thanks a lot. They're sitting there in thongs. They've got mobile phones, all these young monks. Some of them are smoking, you know. And I was like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize. They just want cash. They don't want my bread or whatever I bought for them, you know. So, yeah, I think I've probably got a very idealized perspective of Buddhism.
Obviously, Christianity, to believe, you can take the teachings of Jesus, sure, but the core message of Christianity is that Christ rose from the dead.
That's where I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely where I'm out. Mm. I go, great teacher, wonderful prophet and teacher and great ideas. Don't think his mum was a virgin. Don't think he rose 3 days after. I don't dig any of
that. And I don't think you could necessarily take that much from that story unless you believe that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think the metaphor is that life is eternal.
Yes.
So...
Yeah. I don't believe that. I don't believe all my dead dogs are waiting for me in heaven. I don't believe that. I wish. I really wish I could believe that. Buddhism allows for clairvoyance as well and things like that. So I think that explains a lot of real phenomena that we don't know where to put. We don't know how we can feel like we've known someone all our lives or... You know how we can have these incredible experiences and coincidences with people. I just met a couple the other day from Mauritius who met at Etihad Stadium in Melbourne. Had never met before in Mauritius. They met on New Year's Eve. There were 16,000 people there. They met. They fell in love. They found out their families didn't live far apart in Mauritius. They have all this shared history. And I go, that's, come on. That's something, isn't it?
Could just be like a random coincidence. Could just be chaos.
This is my magical
thinking.
But
I'm interested to know then how you say you're not into magic and you're an agnostic, but you firmly believe in...
I don't want to be.
Believe in reincarnation.
Yeah, I feel...
In that very real sense.
Yeah, it's funny. That one I don't feel funny about. That one just makes sense to me. It just makes sense on a fundamental level.
I just think of it more slightly different in that what you put out in the world is kind of your spirit.
Yep.
And then that lives on and keeps going. And then your body breaks down into little atoms and those keep going as well.
I love that.
But, you but don't you're think talking about something slightly... You're
You don't think that spirit that you put out into the world is ever reborn into a physical form again?
Oh, well, I don't know.
Yeah,
right. I don't know because I'm an agnostic.
Yeah, right.
And that's why I'm curious why... But you're just saying it's logical.
It is to me. Yeah. And I'm aware that... It's not to everyone. Certainly, like Susan Carland is a friend of mine who's Muslim and she converted as a teenager, late teens. And she and I had these very similar experiences with different religions. She encountered Islam and went, ah, well, that just makes sense.
Wow, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's funny because to me, Islam doesn't make any more sense than Christianity and yet Buddhism, ah, well, that just makes sense to me. You know, so again, I'm aware of that.
How have you ever been with obedience and doing what you're told? Have you ever been a well-behaved person in that sense?
Not really. It's a very great challenge for me. And again, it's something I hope to get better at.
Because I think that might be part of it. When you're going to a... Because I was perusing Hinduism for when I was over there.
Yeah.
And the thing that... And I was in Rishikesh and all that stuff. And the thing that I couldn't digest was... Not just talk of God, but obedience to God.
Yeah.
You have to do what God tells you. Uh-huh. And it just made me think that most people are sitting there imagining some angry man in the sky saying, you better do what you're told. Oh,
absolutely. I was raised with that. And not only him, but all your dead relatives. Like I was raised to believe that my dead grandfather was watching me, you know, try masturbating with... With all your dead relatives watching you and that it was a really real thing. And so...
You've just given me a new fantasy for my next crystal meth episode. How do you like that? Brandon. How do you like that one, Nana? Bad uncle. Hi, auntie.
I know. That took a lot of getting over, that idea. I don't think that's real. It doesn't make
sense. But you believe
sense.
That. You believe that.
I did.
And you believed in God as well.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. But when I got to 15, I went... Actually, you know what? No, I'm not Christian. I'm not interested in any of this. It's hypocritical. It's corrupted. And then I've kind of drifted back from that extreme perspective, I think, and I've been able to come back and go, actually, the teachings at the core of that are great and I'm not engaging with anything else about it, but I can recognize that. But Buddhism just makes sense to me. Yeah. And beyond anything else, it makes me a better person. So it's like, even if I'm wrong, even if I die and there's God waiting for me going, well, now what? I am real. I've been watching the whole time. At least I've been a good person. At least I've tried to commit to altruism and positivity and all that stuff, you know?
When you talk, just going back to the reincarnation stuff, when you're talking about the soul, this kind of essence changing form or being taken on by another person, does it take on an aspect of the personality in the sense that would you believe a really credible past life channeler?
Maybe. I'd
possibly.
Yeah, I read those books about those kids who remember their lives and stuff. I had a really intense vision in Edinburgh once, but I should preface it by saying I also had a fever.
And you had a lot of acid as well.
I had no acid. acid at all, but I did have a fever and I thought, I wonder, could I have been hallucinating? I've never been that sick before in my life that I have hallucinated. And yet, because I come from Scottish ancestry, I really felt really connected to that city when I got there in that country. And I had a really intense vision. So I thought, well, I think that was a past life vision. I was like lying on these stone steps. My skull was smashed. It's very graphic. And I could see the boots of army guys standing in front of me and they were walking up the stairs and there was just chaos all around me. Like they'd come in there and smashed us all to bits and then they were leaving. British guys.
But, I mean, this, let's just talk, crystal meth, psychosis.
Yes.
You have periods where you're having vivid fantasies.
Yes.
For no, I mean, I'm sure you're a very imaginative, creative person.
Yes.
As well. And I'm sure that you would have also known logically that something like that, yes, could have happened there.
I knew it had happened historically, yes.
Yeah. So yes. At what point is it,
yes,
is it somebody could turn around and say, well, that's your brain flicking over and not being able to make a distinction between fantasy and reality.
Yes. Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm open to that. It was something I'd never had before or since, a sensation. But I also am very aware that I had a fever, so I don't know.
But who knows with some of this stuff? Because I've had times where intuition has been.
Yeah.
And I think that but you can go very wrong with all that as well. So listen, I try and keep a very open mind. I went and saw a psychic in Ubud for a story recently. Mm-hmm. Ubud, which is in Bali.
Yes.
Which is where all the Eat, Pray, Lovers,
yes,
tend to go now. And I asked her to contact my dead grandfather and ask him why he committed suicide.
Yeah.
And I had my recorder with me while we did it. And I was left unconvinced by what she had to say.
Yeah.
Because it was very general.
Mm-hmm.
And the only things that she asked that were specific were factually incorrect. And it was all very reassuring. And it's okay. He's happy now.
Yeah.
And I had a feeling that she might have been a prostitute on the side as well. And that she was using the money that I was not, because I didn't pay for it, but
yeah,
her money to be a psychic on plastic surgery.
Ah.
Because she was 70, but she looked like she was about 45 or something.
Wow.
So she was a strange lady. But when I listened back to the recording, and I wouldn't say this to many people, but I heard a weird crackling sound when she said she was going to channel him. This strange crackling sound.
Mm.
And I'm just, I mean, I don't believe in any of that stuff because I haven't ever had an encounter,
mm-hmm,
like that before. And I'm the last person who should be talking about people who just say he's back on drugs again sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I thought I'll go with an open mind because who knows, but she wasn't it. But did she start to get into some weird realm there or something, or was it just a coincidence?
I don't know. And I kind of love not going, that not knowing. That's that magical thinking again. There is a big part of me that loves the idea that magic could exist.
Well, it's very reassuring, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the idea is if we get in contact with somebody from the other side, it means that we're not going to die. And that's what we all, that's what our, yes, egos want, isn't it?
Yes, that we're never going to really disappear.
No, that's the conceit, yeah, of our egos in some ways.
Yeah,
but,
it is.
But at the same token,
and then,
got to keep an open mind.
Yeah, totally. I did a podcast with, who's that famous TV guy, psychic?
Not Ray Martin.
No, that guy.
He does that show.
Yeah.
Anderson, no?
I can't believe I can't remember his name.
Crossing Over?
Crossing Over with John Edward.
John Edward.
I did a podcast with John Edward, right? Just the loveliest man. Just so lovely. And in that moment, I was... We didn't do a reading. We were just talking about what it's like to be John Edward, you know? And he was talking about being bullied as a young man when he came out as psychic and all that stuff and people who accuse him of being a fake. And I said to him, yeah, because if you're a fake... And he finished the sentence. He said to me, if I'm a fake, I'm the worst person in the world.
It's not that I thought that this woman was a fake.
Yeah.
And it's not that I think that they're fakes necessarily. Yeah. And I don't know much about him at all, so I'm not commenting on him. But to me, they start to believe their own lies. And that switch has flicked where they haven't been able to distinguish between fantasy and reality.
Yeah, that is a different space, isn't it?
And they, yes, seem like creative people, colourful people,
yeah,
who do creative things, who are very imaginative, and a little bit grandiose as well.
Mm.
And sure, you know, you start to tell a story about your dead grandfather, a very imaginative person, sits there and starts to picture all these yeah. things and have all these ideas,
yeah.
may come to believe that.
Yeah, yeah. That is a really pleasant way of looking at it, because I've always been troubled by that conversation with him. I liked him so much, but then another part of me is going, but it can't. He can't really be contacting people's dead relatives, because the Buddhist in me says they're not hanging around as Uncle Sam. They've moved on to another, you know, existence, another birth. Oh God, it's all very complicated.
Well, no, this the woman who I met, she genuinely believed that she had a gift.
Yeah,
but she didn't. It was just her imagination.
She didn't.
Because there was no sign. There was nothing to verify.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think that the positive messages that she was giving people was probably helpful.
Yeah.
Well,
there's that. I should let you go.
We should stop talking. How long have we been talking for?
You know what? 2 hours.
2 hours.
It's so good. I'm going to make that two.
Luke Williams, author of Ice Age and many fascinating articles that I read around the Australian press. I think he's about to be discovered by Europe. That is my guess, my educated guess. Just judging by the sort of communications I've had with him over the last couple of weeks, things are looking good, and so they should. He's quite extraordinary. Thank you so much for downloading. Please feel free to go to the iTunes store and give us a couple of stars. We love extra stars. I'll be back with another episode of the Nitty Gritty Committee in a couple of weeks. Take care.